All right, joining us now is Catherine Austin Fitz. Always great to talk to Catherine, and especially want to talk to her as we go into a new year. And she's also got, she's working very hard to try to help people get financial transaction freedom. We're going to talk about what that is. She's got a tour that's coming around Tennessee that's going to be happening there. Catherine, in case you don't know her, she's president of Solari Incorporated, and that's at solari.com. That's S-O-L-A-R-I.com. She is a former Assistant Secretary of Housing and Federal Housing Commissioner at the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development in the first Bush administration, was the president of Hamilton Securities Group, and she has designed and closed over $25 billion worth of transactions and investments to date, and has led portfolio and investment strategy for $300 billion of financial assets and liabilities. She understands the financial landscape, and she is committed to liberty. So joining us now is Catherine Austin Fitz. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, David. And I'm excited because I'm headed to Tennessee this month. And I'm hoping when I come through, I'm spending more time on the eastern side of the state these days. I'm going to come through and meet you and
I'd love to do that. I'd love to do that. Yeah. Love to do that. And you got the tour that's coming up, and let's talk about that. But first, let's we'll lay out what financial transaction freedom is. But let's talk about 2024 and also looking back at 2023. How do you see the top stories? As we were talking off air, you said you have your top stories for the year that you typically cover. What did you see as the top stories for 2023?
So we are great believers in open source intelligence at Solari, and every week we pour into our databases the top headlines. So we're constantly pouring. You know, if you do a search for the David Knight Show, you'll find a bunch of stuff. And you know, so we have a new media list, and we're pouring in headlines from, you know, all different sources. We get people sending us links all over the world. And then weekly, I do a show called Money and Markets with Titus, and we pick out the top 20 stories and talk about those for that week. And then when we get to the quarter and the year, so every quarter, but the last one is the annual wrap up, we have a team of four people who synthesize all the stories and sit down and say, okay, what are the most important stories that people, you know, individuals or families need to know to navigate this environment? What's important? And every time I come into one of those efforts, and it takes us about a month to build out to the top 20 stories for the quarter of the year, I think, well, I know what's going on. You know, I'm on top of it. I'm watching the news. And yet we go through the process and we realize after we've collected everything different, you know, together, it's like, oh, you know, I didn't realize how big that was or how important. Anyway, this time we normally our top story is on the financial coup d'etat or the going direct reset. This time our top story was not only very different, but typically we put all the top 20 stories on one page. This story was so big and so long, it had to have its own page and the other 19 stories, the second page. and the title is 2023, the year of pushback.
Wow.
And what I didn't realize, David, until I pulled it all together in all the different categories, the extent of the pushback. You know, it's almost like 2020, we get whacked. 2021, we realize something's fishy. 2022, we decide to take action and we start. 2023, you see the lawsuits filed. You see the, you know, the different, you know, businesses started or initiatives started. And you know, there are many different categories. But what happened is the pushback blossomed. And then if you look at how it's blossoming and who's doing what you realize is 2024 is going to be explosive. Yeah. It's beautiful. Well,
I definitely think that's going to be the case. The question is, who's going to be putting the plunger down?
And whether well, they got it it's wired funny. I too. Said, you know, I said when I was talking about it, because we do, you know, we do a recording and it's a mega recording with Dr. Farrell that we'll publish next week with an analysis of all the 20 stories. But I said, this is like a big game of Texas chicken where the establishment is trying to centralize and the pushback is not only pushing back, but saying, you know, something, we're going to do our own reset. I call it the building wealth reset. Mm-hmm. You're doing the going direct reset. We're going to do the building wealth reset. We're going to build wealth bottom up, family wealth, community wealth. You know, we've had it with you guys destroying and stealing everything. So you got these two cars going together at 60 miles an hour. And, you know, the pushback team is looking much stronger than I ever realized until we did this. So I came out of the process so enthusiastic. I think it's going to be a great year. Our quote for the commentary for this year is from a preacher down in Texas. He says, our situation is defined by extraordinary opportunities brilliantly disguised as impossible situations.
That's like the guy who the American general who was surrounded, and he goes, that's good news, we can attack them in any direction, right? That's I guess that's where we are right now. You know, they've done their best to surround us. Well, you know, that's the thing. I look at it and I get frustrated because it seems like there's so many people who don't know. There's a lot more people who don't care. And then even amongst the people who know and care, a lot of them don't really know what to do. And that's what I like about what you do, because you've got some action items to take and especially focusing on the money part, because that is such an important aspect of control. You know, it is central to the control.
Yeah. So we just have subscribers, you know, we had these hats called, you know, that they're orange hats and say, "Make cash great again." And people are sending us pictures from all over the world. Here's, you know, cash, make cash great again on top of Mount Kilimanjaro, you know, but they're sending us pictures, including of their kids, because they're having, they're giving them the kids. But we get stories from all over the world how people are using cash and sort of dialing back the systems. And it's so inspiring to hear all these stories, because not only are they using cash, but they're beginning to engage with local businesses to talk about, okay, what are we going to do? How are we going to do? You know, they're talking to their banks, they're talking to their credit unions, they're talking to the local businesses. And it's almost like they're coming out of the trance and getting ready to transact their way back to freedom.
Good. And
it's good. We did a great, interview in 2022 called Where to Stash Your Cash in 2022. And we're going to redo it this month, Where to Stash Your Cash in 2024. But it's sort of helping you build resiliency in your day-to-day life. Yeah. And we also have a program called Building Wealth because, you know, as I said, we do need a reset, but we need a reset that rebuilds and builds family wealth. And family wealth is the basis of community wealth.
That's right.
And, you know, the problem with what's going on is we basically have an organized crime operation that's stealing and taking our wealth. So that's got to be reversed. So you've got to, you know, push back against them getting financial transaction control, which, and then if they get that, David, they will take everything.
Oh, yeah.
Everything.
Oh, absolutely.
They will take everything. So, you know, it's slavery or freedom. But we also, when we say, no, we reject your complete control, we have to take responsibility bottom up to build the kind of culture and economy that, you know, we want our kids and grandkids growing up in.
That's absolutely true. I've said many times, I forget who said it. I said, you can't win a culture war if you don't have a culture. We don't have a culture. We've just sat back and let them feed us a culture, and we just kind of watch.
You can't run a financial system just with law and enforcement.
Right.
You know, the enforcement, the only productive enforcement comes from a moral culture and institutions that will allow their people and encourage their people to be moral.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's funny. I just did an interview today with a gold company here, and I'm in the Netherlands right now. And they're a wonderful company. I've only done maybe four or five transactions with them, but each time, totally clean, totally professional, high speed, no monkey business, no dirty tricks, everything clean as a whistle. Everybody down to the drivers are great. It's like boom, 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 and you think, you know, this is how it should work.
Yes.
But they have, if you look at who owns them and how they operate, they're highly moral.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's culture that's going to drive that. I don't know if you saw it, but we did this wonderful panel with CHD Tennessee in Rogersville with Senator Nicely and Representative Halsey.
Oh, I have to
and,
see that. Yeah.
Oh, it was a hoot. Can I tell you, it was so great. First, I did a speech. Then we did the panel. If you watch it, just cut to the panel, because Halsey and Nicely are great. But Halsey gives this whole description of how the Constitution came out of, you know, a culture and a morality. And unless we protect and nurture and enforce that culture, nothing good can come from anything. And it's very eloquent.
I agree.
You know,
and it is very important to have people that you trust and everything. That's why, you know, we work with Tony Arterburn at Wise Wolf Gold, and he's even set up a website, davidknight.gold. And we were just talking about that yesterday, how Costco, they sold, what was that, 100 million or 300 million? I don't know what it was, amazing amount of gold. You know, but Walmart is getting in it now. But it's like you want to deal with people that you know. and people
who can lock something in. I don't want Walmart knowing what I own.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, you go down to a Walmart and you can buy it with your JP Morgan card, you know, and Bank of America card. And but that's the, that kind of defeats a lot of the purpose of that. You say exactly. In the foreword to your financial transaction freedom, you have a quote from William Faulkner. It says, "We must be free, not because we claim freedom, but because we practice it." And I thought that was really profound. You know, we always talk about, well, you know, we got the Constitution, we got this and that. You know, well, you know, they had the Declaration of Independence, but they still had to fight the war, you know, to get that independence. You can't just declare your independence. You got to make it happen. And that's really what this document is about, the financial transaction freedom. Tell us a little bit about that. Tell us, first of all, give us your definition of that.
So there are two big documents in this wrap up. And the first one, interestingly enough, came from Tennessee. I was meeting with a group of state legislators and some of the government officials. And there's a wonderful guy who runs the revenue department. He's a really smart guy. And he said, "Would you write a memo for me on financial transaction freedom? What is it? What threatens it? And what can we do to protect it?" And, you know, that was a harder job. I got my general counsel and I, and we wrote it. And so let's start with what is financial transaction freedom. Financial transaction freedom is the ability to trade, you know, to trade money for goods or to, you know, or to barter and swap and to do it in a way where, one, it's private, two, you have multiple options, three, it's liquid, and nobody's stopping or controlling you by controlling your financial transactions. So we all know the story of what happened to the Canadian truckers.
Yeah.
That is financial transaction control. Now, what I believe, if you go to Solari and you down on the right, there's a panel that says videos on financial transaction freedoms and CBDCs. And it's a list of 80 short videos that show you what the central bankers are planning on doing, including asserting total control of your money.
Oh, yeah.
So that, one, they can make rules centrally and enforce them centrally with AI and software on all digital systems that control your money. So if they decide they want to raise taxes, they just take it out of your account. If they decide it'll help with inflation, they just freeze your account. Mm-hmm. You know, and they describe the deposits in your account as an expression of central bank liability. It's not your money, it's their money. That's number one. Number two, they want to program money. So if they don't want your money working more than 5 miles from your house, or they don't want you buying pizza because they think, you know, it's not good for you, then your money won't buy pizza. Your money, your digital cards and digital transactions and bank transactions won't work, you know, if you're more than 5 miles from your home. Mm-hmm. So it's called programmability. Anyway, so if you look at the first couple videos, there's also one of the great videos. There is a video from one of the presidents of one of the 12 Fed banks saying, "I understand why China wants CBDCs, but why would Americans ever let this happen?"
Yeah.
You know, I mean, because you're talking about a slavery system.
Yes.
If they get financial transaction control and control of the food supply, which is part of what they're up to, and if you look at some of our wrap-ups, we've written a lot about that recently as well, because it's, you know, it's part of the same play. If they get financial transaction control, David, and they can control your bank account, you know, and institute taxation without representation, then they can dictate anything. They can dictate what drugs you're going to take. They can dictate whether or not you've got to take injections. They can dictate where your kids go to school. They can dictate that your kids can't live with you anymore. They've got to come to, you know, XYZ government boarding school, whatever.
That's right.
You're talking about a slavery system.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the fourth video in the stack is Richard Warner, the top central bank expert in the world, in my opinion, academic expert, explaining that one of the top central banks heads in Europe told him that it's a chip they're planning on putting in our hands. So, and we've seen discussions at the World Economic Forum with the head of Nokia and others talking about how we're going to all be chipped.
Yeah. Yeah, so, for convenience, you know, for convenience. And it really is.
For their convenience.
Yeah, yeah. You want to have, I played the video over and over again from that was produced in Ukraine. And they said, well, you know, after we get past this war and we're victorious, 2030 is just going to be great. You know, when you, any interaction that you have with other people, but especially all the different things that you're required to do with government, we'll just make that so convenient because we'll have a CBDC and we'll have your, everything that you have will be on your phone and so forth. And it's like, wow, this is totally comprehensive. And as you pointed out, right. They're going to be able with the programmability, make your money invalid if you're not in the correct area. It's all about enslaving and imprisoning us,
right.
You know, and
so, making sure we don't travel. So when the World Economic Forum says it's 2030 and you have no assets, the question is, how do they strip you of all your assets? How do they strip you of your property rights? How do they strip you of your assets? And the way you do it is if you can get total financial transaction control, then you can strip people of all their assets. Mm-hmm. You just turn off their money.
That's right. Yeah, we already saw a little bit of this. You know, you mentioned the Freedom Convoy. That was a big wake up for everybody because now it's no longer a conspiracy theory. It's a conspiracy reality. They've already done it. And and then we saw, you know, with January the 6th, we saw Bank of America, you know, creating a Stasi list of here's all the people that had financial transactions within this area on January the 6th. And the way, here's our records of all the people who used our credit card to buy guns. You want to put those together, FBI? So we know how they're going to use this. It's very sinister. And when you look at it, it's almost as if, you know, the Bank of America was asking them, would you like us to confiscate their money and lock up their accounts?
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, it truly is amazing. So, you know, when we look at it, there's some other things on it as well. I'm looking at the memo, and there's a downloadable PDF that you have at Solari.com.
It's coming to Solari. It just says Financial Transaction Freedom Memo, and we have it in PDF, and you can download it. We sell hard copies for free, or we put it in the wrap-up. You can buy that, but if you're a subscriber, but just download it for free, print it out. Make as many copies as you want. Spread it everywhere.
And so you just define what financial freedom is. You've got to have multiple different ways outside of their system, a lot of different options and things like that. Privacy, no surveillance and that type of thing. But then you also have action items because I've talked for the longest time about CBDC.
Right.
Go ahead. Tell us about the action items.
The next step, well, to understand action items, you have to understand what threatens financial transaction freedom because it's not just central bank controls and CBDCs and digital IDs. It's also power outages, okay? Mm-hmm. It's cybersecurity attacks. There are all sorts of other things. You know, when the cyclones hit in New Zealand, the governor of the central bank there gave a press conference afterwards, and he said, thank God for cash. If we hadn't had cash, we would have been, and I'll turn to John Titus that week, and I said, I guess he didn't get the memo. But remember when there was that huge power outage in Kentucky?
Oh, yeah.
For weeks?
Yeah.
If you didn't have cash, you were in real trouble. Mm-hmm. Okay, so there are multiple things that can compromise because what we're talking about doing is not allowing digital systems to get control.
Yes.
And that's why we always say to people, the first thing you can do is to roll back digital systems. Stop being so dependent on digital systems. You want to have analog alternatives and you want to be resilient in the face of real hiccups with digital systems, whether it's a power outage, whether it's government sanctions, whether it's central bank intervention, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, build that resiliency into your life. There are many ways you can do it. So the first thing we talk about is using cash and starting to engage with local businesses, particularly your farmers and your farmer markets, fresh food. Because the most important thing you need to do in this environment is you need a good, strong, clear brain and healthy body. Mm-hmm. And that starts with good, healthy, fresh food. And as we know, there's terrible deterioration in the quality of the food.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, line up your food locally. The second thing you can do is bring transparency. We have a wonderful post, we link to it from that memo, called I Want to Stop CBDCs, What Can I Do? And it lists 11 things you can do. But one of the things you can do is tell your family and friends. So we have these 11, we have a link to these CBDC shorts, and they're 1 minute, you know, the first three are 1 minute each, and the fourth one is 2.5 minutes, really short. And in those 3 1-minute videos, they will scare you to death. And I defy anybody to think they don't need to take action once they see those. You know, so you don't need to read a lot of books or watch a lot of long videos. We, you know, in 3 1-minute videos, we can communicate to you why you got to do something about this.
That's great.
Another thing people can do that is exceptionally important is talk to your financial service providers. Talk to your CPA, talk to your attorney, talk to your bank, talk to all these people and get them realizing that they've got to push back. If the state banking associations start to push back and protect people from transaction control, you know, and mm-hmm. compromise of their financial transaction freedom, they can have a huge impact. And they should do that because if you look at what the central bankers are up to, they intend to consolidate the banking system. The Fed is rolling out the fast payment system. We saw what they did to a group of banks last week. They're going to consolidate the banking system, which is going to be terrible for the small business economy mm-hmm. and terrible bottom up for the health of the economy and family wealth. So get your banks, get your investment advisors, get your CPAs, get your lawyers, get all your financial professionals lined up and educated, you know, bring transparency and get them on board. The next thing you need to do mm-hmm. is there are 10 plus states in this country that have legislative agendas that are filing and knocking through bills that are going to protect the financial transaction freedom of the people in those states. You and I are in Tennessee, and mm-hmm. Tennessee is absolutely leading the way. It's one of those states, and they're working on, you know, sovereign payment systems or banks. They're working on bullion depositories and a way for citizens to store their gold and silver, but transact their gold and silver within the state in a way that absolutely protects financial transaction freedom and voting gold and silver to be legal tender. So we can't get locked into a CBDC system, you know, where we don't have legal tender unless we use CBDCs. Mm-hmm. They've already taken in many states in Tennessee the sales tax off. Part of that legal tender bill is to make sure gold and silver are protected from capital gains tax. They're doing moves to protect and build analog payment systems. So again, that you can have your digital systems shut down or controlled from out of state. They are now bringing nullification laws. I'm sure you've talked about that. Oh, yeah. Changing the definition of money so it can't be, CBDCs can't be included in the definition of money. Nullification bills. Did I mention nullification already? Nullification mm-hmm. bills to make sure that any law that's unconstitutional under both the federal constitution or the state constitution is included. Mm-hmm. And then...
Let me interject there. Last time I talked to Senator Nicely, we were talking about this pistol brace thing, and he goes, we've already got taken care of. You know, we passed this nullification thing saying that if the federal law conflicts with the Tennessee law, and he said, and then we passed they can't do it, they can't enforce it. And he said, and then we passed a law to make pistol braces legal. So they're on top of it. They really, really are on top of it.
And they are on top of it.
You were talking about educating the banks and, you know, your CPA and anybody that you deal yep. with financially. And it's a really, last time I talked to him, he was saying it was difficult to get the local banks to understand that a state bank was going to help them, like it did in North Dakota, where they have a lot more right. Local banks than any other state, and they have right. worked to help them. And he goes, but you talk about a state bank, and they think it's some kind of competition. So he came up with the idea of calling it a Tennessee Reserve System. And he said, then
that's
they understand. And he's really brilliant at that, isn't he?
Yeah. I think Senator Nicely, you know, our team at Solari, our number one goal this year is to support financial transaction freedom because we want to be free.
Yeah.
And if we don't get financial transaction freedom, we won't be free. And for us to be free, we need everybody to be free. Mm-hmm. And I look around and I say, who are the most astute politicians who can understand and move this kind of, you know, build this infrastructure, you know, one bill at a time, because it's going to take many, many bills and quite an education.
Yeah.
And I think Senator Nicely is the most effective politician I have ever known or dealt with. Washington state politicians, you know, global here in Europe. I've never met a more effective politician in my life.
Oh, I agree. I absolutely agree. Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. So, you know, we're talking
and
about
he is, you got to see this panel in Rogerville because he also happens to be one of the funniest people alive.
Yeah. He's got a great sense of humor.
At one point, he was talking about his you know, I said to him, Senator Nicely, you know, I hold you personally responsible for the traffic problems in Tennessee, because for the last 10 to 12 years, you keep lowering taxes. And he said, yeah, my wife says, you know, he's married to a Texan. He says, my wife says, if we lower taxes anymore, he said, everybody's going to move in here. And it's my fault that we have all these Yankees and Californians moved in. But I tell my wife, this is, you got to watch it. It's so funny. He says, I tell my wife, he said, you know, I don't mind the Yankees moving in, because one thing we know about Yankees, they will fight. And we learned that the hard way.
He really does know his history. That's the other thing that's very interesting about Senator Nicely. But, you know, you were talking about the pushbacks. And one of the things that you mentioned when you were talking about pushbacks was, and you touched on it just now, the definition of money in UCCs. And you mentioned that South Carolina had done that. I know that
South Carolina
DeSantis
moved
did
a bill.
It in Florida. And so how many have changed the definition of money to say it's not going to be CBDC, but it's going to be, but it, we are going to allow this and that as a definition?
Yeah. I don't know how many. I know Florida's done it. I know South Carolina has done it. We have a team that's trying to collect it and identify who has done all, you know, in 15 different legislative categories, who has done what in terms of a state bank, a sovereign bullion depository, whatever. So as we do that, we find more states. I will say this. One of the things I would like to have more capacity in is understanding how to protect states through the UCC, because a lot of the monkey business happens through the UCC, the Uniform Commercial Code. So if there are UCC attorneys out there who are willing to help, please, you know, this is a call for help. Because the UCC is, you know, it's state by state, but it's highly complicated, as you know, David. And I think, you know, a lot of the games are happening inside the UCC.
Well, you know, I remember when I first heard about that in conjunction with the CBDC, it was Kristi Noem in South Dakota who said, you know, this thing came across and we vetoed it, but, you know, be aware that there's more than 20 some odd states that have had that pushed out to them. Next thing I saw was that DeSantis went the opposite direction. You know, the what they're pushing out was legislation to say that CBDCs would have to be accepted as money. DeSantis went the other way and said they will not be accepted as money, but we will accept Bitcoin and cash and all the rest of this stuff that we currently have. And so now South Carolina has done that as well. That's good news. There's so many different ways that we can push back on this. And again, if you point back, you know, there's a lot of pushback, lawsuits against the companies because of damage and things like that. It is a constant struggle. And it really is hard to try to keep, to get a sense of whether people are waking up. I got to the point where I just thought nobody's ever going to wake up in 2020.
Tremendous number of people are waking up. If you look at the pushback, I'll tell you, one of the greatest pushback sort of clusters is the state AGs and treasurers. The treasurers are pushing back like crazy against ESG. We just had the treasurer of Utah write a letter to the SEC to try and stop or delay the proposed comment rule ending on natural asset companies, which is another, you know, talk about real trouble coming anyway. But the pushback by the state AGs, you know, so Missouri versus Biden is a great example of litigation filed by Louisiana and Missouri. You know, but the state AGs and the treasurers are on the move and they're teaming up. So if you look at the filing at the of the Utah treasurer in at the SEC, his letter was signed by himself and 23 other treasurers. So, you know, they're teaming up groups of AGs and groups of treasurers that Larry Fink and BlackRock have had to roll back their whole ESG initiative because so many treasurers have pulled money, or I think one now, I think Tennessee is sued.
Scarametti,
I don't know if it's the treasurer. Somebody in Tennessee has sued the.
I think it's Scarametti, the attorney general.
It could be the AG.
He said it is fraudulent because you're telling people that they're making an investment, so therefore you're going to be trying to do things that you know are exercise care, fiduciary care, the financial side. But you're completely ignoring the financial side, and you got your own agenda over here.
Well, but there's something else. BlackRock is making huge fees off the state pension funds. And if you look at the hypocrisy of what Larry Fink is saying, it's extraordinary. I did a wrap up in 2019 called "Can ESG Turn the Red Button Green?" And basically what I was describing was all the hypocrisy in the system, because they're using it to enforce central control as opposed to enforce real standards that improve, in my opinion, the governance of society. So, Larry Fink has gotten called out on his hypocrisy.
And that's great. That's the treasurers who are coming out and saying, we're going to move our investments away from them, putting financial pressure on them. And then you got some attorneys general who are saying, well, this is fraudulent and we're going to sue them because they've told people that their company is about this, but it's actually about this other thing.
Well, here's the thing. At the very heart of the pushback in all these different forms, what you're seeing is people on the ground who want to be productive. You know, people want to go to work and do a good job without having to, you know, share bathrooms with the other sex and get into that conversation. They want to go back without, you know, they want to be free to say something without being fired for, you know, offending hate crime. All this stuff is destroying productivity, and they've had it. Mm-hmm. So what they're saying is, if I'm a treasurer, I'm looking across the state and saying, the guys in Washington and Wall Street and Basel, Switzerland are using climate change as a ruse to shut down our businesses, take control of our markets, and steal our money.
Yes.
Why should I finance them doing that?
Yes.
Because they're not doing what they say they're doing. They're just using this to assert central control. You know, just like during the pandemic, you shut down 10 small businesses, you leave Costco in the same shopping mall open, and, you know, on the theory that the magic virus only operates in small business, but it doesn't operate in large publicly traded stocks, and you scarf and steal the market share from the small businesses. Had nothing to do with health. Yeah. It had to do with shifting significant market share out of locally owned and controlled businesses into publicly traded stocks, you know, and in a way that made Larry Fink a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it's a scam.
Yeah. Yeah. That made me so angry when that was happening, because I had lived that with my wife and I. We had a video store business back in the early 90s, and we had a hurricane that came through and took power out for several days. And we finally got it back in one area. We opened up that store. And then the police came by and said, you got to shut your store down. And I said, well, Walmart is open right across the store, right across the street. You know, you got to shut your business down because you're attracting people to come out and drive around. They shouldn't be out driving around now. And it's like, well, who are you to make that decision, number one? And number two, you're telling me essentially what Trump said, you're not essential. You know, Walmart is essential, but you close down because
they want, you know, basically it's the big guys stealing market share from the little guys.
That's right.
It's very simple.
That's right.
It's a steal. It's called a taking.
Yes. Yes.
Right.
And it's, you know, hurting Main Street in order to help Wall Street, the big companies that are essential. And so when I saw that, I'd already lived that for, you know, just a couple of days. And it made me so angry to see that they were going to be putting people out of business who had poured their sweat and energy and capital into this and worked it for years, just to be told that they're non-essential. I still get angry when I think about that. But talk about some of the other things you mentioned.
Here's what happened in 2023.
Mm-hmm.
In 2021, people agreed to play along with that, or 2020, because they thought the government had a legitimate reason. Once you understand that this is just a mafia trying to steal your business, that's when you say, oh, two people can play this game. So you, the municipality, are going to shut me down? Great. I'm going to audit your books. I'm going to get all your financial disclosure. And I'm going to dig into your money, and I'm going to dig into the money of everybody on the city council. By the time I'm through, you're all going to be gone. So we have a wonderful woman who works for us in Tennessee. She was in Knoxville. She tried to get the mask mandate canceled and couldn't do it. And so she went in and figured out the committee, you know, in government that was deciding this. She figured out how they were formed, and she got the committee canceled. And they canceled, you know, there was no mask mandate because the committee that was supposed to implement it was gone.
That's great. And that's what really needs to happen, because that's the thing that concerns me, is that, you know, we're not, in so many cases, we have seen people who are just, oh, I'm so glad that this isn't happening again. They realize it was a fraud. They don't want to play along with it. But now that it's ended, as you point out, everybody just wants to get on with their life, right? Instead of going back and rooting this out. And
they want to be productive. They want to build family wealth. And that's why.
That's right.
You have to give them ways of pushing back that they can push back in a way that helps them build family wealth. So what we're saying is, make yourself more resilient, make yourself more successful, lower your dependency. Every time you you pull money and market share out of the companies that are doing this, you know, and the support the politicians who are doing this, you make yourself more powerful, you make yourself stronger, and they get weaker. So it's like having a tapeworm. You know, what we're saying is detox the tapeworm to make yourself stronger. And anytime you can do anything that lowers your dependency on their systems, like using cash. I mean, using cash is really, you know, can save you a lot of money. I mean, we've proven again and again, if people use cash, they spend less, they're more careful, they think through, you know, their purchase decisions. But you can also build up incredibly great relationships with your local business, you know, in the process of transacting with them. It's a much more intimate way of transacting.
Yeah.
And you find all sorts of opportunities when that conversation gets going. So people are busy, and this is an exhausting environment in many ways because of the compliance and rules. And people don't like to fight and add friction, because that doesn't get them anywhere a lot of times. You know, they see a lot of people fighting in ways that aren't effective. They don't want to be a part of that. So you need to give them ways of pushing back, which help to build their strength and power and wealth. I go back, the most important one is they have to be healthy. And that means, you know, if I encourage anyone to invest time in building wealth, step one is getting the knowledge you need to take responsibility for your own health and making sure you're getting clean water and nutritious food and you are not get poisoned, you know, because we are in the middle, particularly in America, of a great poisoning.
Oh, yeah.
And people are getting sick from being poisoned, and they need to understand what the process is and how to protect themselves and their family. And if people are really good at protecting themselves from the great poison, David, they have 10 times more energy.
That's right.
So step number one is get yourself off the poison treadmill.
And when you look at it, the you know, it's going to cost you more to get this other food, right? But not if you compare that to what's going to happen if you get sick and you got to engage with the healthcare system. I mean, that just blows away. You can buy organic food all day forever before you have your first hospital bill. They're going to really fleece you. Talk about destroying you financially. That's what happens with the hospital system. So if you can stay out of that and get clean food, you're way ahead of the game, even financially, let alone in terms of enjoying the health.
Absolutely. Our annual wrap-up last year was called Pharma Food, and it was on synthetic food and lab-grown meat. And it was the hardest thing I've ever had to read. We hired this wonderful Dutch journalist, Elsa von Hamelen, to write it, and she did an incredible job. And when she came back with it, it's the first time in my life I couldn't read a draft the whole way through because it's so evil. If you see the hundreds of billions of dollars they're throwing at making $30 hamburgers that are, you know, created with 3D printing, it's so horrible. You can't imagine that they want anybody to eat this, you know, and nobody's going to eat it without financial transaction control, because they're going to mandate the only food you're allowed to buy are sort of bugs and synthetic meat. So anyway, we published it, and I thought, David, it would be the least popular wrap-up that we ever published because it's so horrible and gruesome. We published it, and it's brilliant. It really warns you about what these guys are up to and why you can't allow financial transaction control happen, because this is the food they're going to try and feed you. And anyway, we published it, and it was hugely popular and successful because all the fresh food people used it to market. You know, all the people at the farmers market are like, you know, here's what they're going to do if you don't support us. And I had one subscriber write in this one, you know, we get these great emails, and they said, you know, I have tried and tried and tried to get my husband to buy from the local farmers and farmers market and really develop our fresh food supply locally. And he says it's too hard work and it's too much money. I gave him Pharma Food. He said, I am all in.
Well, that's a shame. You know, it's great that you got that. It was really a shame. After we moved here, we finally found a local farm that was doing clean local food and everything. And, you know, we could get raw milk as a membership club and things like that.
Oh, wonderful.
And we only did that for a couple of months. And then they said, we just got to close. We can't keep it going. There's not enough demand. And that's the key thing. It was so sad. So now we're looking again, you know, but it is, it's so sad to see how difficult it is for them to maintain that. And, But how important
I don't know if Edible Communities has a magazine for your area. Look at the Edible Communities. It's a franchise of local food magazines all over the country. And I thought I knew every fresh food farmer in my area until I got the Edible Communities magazine for Memphis. And I found so many great sources after I got it. So I would check that out. And of course, check out the Weston Price Club where you are, because there are Weston Price chapters all over the world. Mm-hmm. And they have the greatest networks into knowing what the great food is in your area. And they're the ones who've led the campaign on raw milk. And raw milk is one of the great success stories, because we're now up to 46 states, you know, where there is a pathway to buying raw milk. And that is extraordinary. And it's been the Weston Price guys who really did that.
Oh, that's excellent. So, and of course, the other part of this, and Thomas Massey has been involved in this, and I've reported.
He is my hero.
Yeah. I've talked
Thomas
about.
Thomas Massey was hero of the week three times on the Salary Report in 2023.
Yeah, he's by far and away the best U.S. congressman that's out there.
Absolutely, hands down.
But he's focused on this whole thing about the fact, and a particular Amish farmer, as a matter of fact, there's an update that just happened. This guy that's been harassed by the USDA because he wants to butcher the meat there on the farm and do it cleanly. I'm sure, I can't remember the guy's name, but I'm sure you know the case.
Yeah,
And they've come back and hit him again, because it's very important for them that you've got to go to their centrally controlled meat processing
slaughterhouses.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And that's
it's much safer. A good local operation on the farm is much safer. So so Massey has the what's the name of his the Prime Act.
Yes.
So we've been supporting for several years trying to get the Prime Act passed. And you know, it's funny, one of the things I do, you know, it started with Ron Paul, but then it went to Massey. Whenever I'm depressed, you know, I'm just thinking, oh God, it's, you know, I'm fighting with, I call the force the nothing. I'm fighting with the nothing. You know, I have to do something to make myself feel good, and I'll send a donation to Massey. It's like, okay, I'll put fuel in the leader's pocket, and I'll feel better.
He's a good guy. He's a good, and he stands like Ron Paul. He stands alone if he has to.
What is it in the water in Kentucky that we, you know, we get the, because Rand Paul's in Kentucky, Massey's in Kentucky.
Yeah, he definitely stood up, and he stood up against that trillions of dollars that Trump wanted to put in. Yep. Trump wanted to get him out, but he didn't get him out. So that's good. I think the people know what he's about.
If you go to Salary and do a search for Massey, you'll pull this up. One of the heroes of the week was Massey absolutely slaughtering that idiot from Texas. You know, not many idiots come from Texas, but this one is the Secretary of Transportation on electric cars, because Massey's an MIT engineer.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
And he knows the whole, you know, electric cars are mathematically, the math of the energy, the math of the environment, the math of the economics, they're absolutely insane. They make no sense whatsoever.
Yeah. It only makes sense in the scientific term if your degree is in political science. And that's what he also did to John
Kerry. If you want total control, so if you want to be able to turn off people's car, so if I lock you down, you can't go more 5 miles from your home, your car will turn off and it won't work more than 5 miles from your home.
Yeah.
I know exactly what, it's about digital concentration camps.
Yes.
Right?
Right. Yes, that's true. Yeah, yeah. He had John Kerry on and he was debating John Kerry, and he pointed out, he says, so you got a science degree? Well, yeah, he goes, political science, right? That's what it was. You know, John Kerry's got a political science degree, because there isn't any, you know, there isn't any science between these. I call them MacGuffins, which is what Hitchcock called them. You know, it doesn't really matter what it is. It could be the Maltese Falcon or be something else, but it's whatever motivates the people to do this. So it could be the virus or it could be the climate, but they've always got the same solution. You know, which is that you got to get an ID and you got to put them in charge and beg them permission for everything. But it doesn't matter what the MacGuffin is. It's interchangeable. Whatever you use to motivate the people. It seems like it always.
So when I became Assistant Secretary of Housing, the secretary wanted to do a big housing bill. You know, he wanted a big accomplishment. He wanted a big housing bill. So the goal was, how do we get the Democrats on board for, and we got Jim Rouse around Fannie Mae. I'm sorry, Jim Rouse around the Enterprise Foundation and David Maxwell around Fannie Mae. They had done a big commission on housing that proposed a lot of decentralization. They were both big Democrats. So we got David and Jim to come in, wonderful men. And Kemp, the secretary, is trying to persuade him into a new housing bill. And a lot of what Kemp was proposing was more centralization. And and David and Jim were, you know, they're wonderful people, very big hearts. And they were saying, well, you know, Jack, you're a Republican. Republicans believe in decentralization. And we proposed a lot of decentralization. And, you know, so we think you should, you know, you would like what we're proposing. And there was, he had these two little assistants from the Heritage Foundation who were truly frightening. And one of them said, so Jack is proposing more centralization. The Democrats are proposing decentralization, which is supposed to be the opposite of their ideologies. So they said, you know, don't you want to decentralize? Why would you want to centralize? And one of the special assistants bursted out. He says, yeah, but we're here now.
That's it.
We're here now.
Yeah.
It's like,
that's why, you know, they never change.
Bring anything. The blood to the Empire headquarters. Bring the blood to the Empire. More extraction, more extraction.
Yeah.
That's why I had to leave Washington. That's why I moved to Tennessee. I was like, you know, you can't decentralize from Washington.
That's right.
Right.
You got to nullify it. You got to have some things at the local level. So you've talked about some of these things. Sovereign state bank. I'm looking at your list here. Actions that can be taken to secure financial freedom. And so you start out with state and local government, but then you talk about having some local organizations to try to help this. Maybe because we don't want to all be in, you can't get too much done on your own. You've got three different sections. There's state and local. You got what you can do with small associations, and then things that you can do as an individual. It's a great.
Right. And what you can do as an investor. Mm-hmm. I do want to mention the second memo in the document in the future of financial freedom wrap up is our sovereign state bank memo by Richard Werner. Outstanding, and explains to you why you do not want to let the central bankers consolidate the small banks. Mm-hmm. You do not want that to happen. And the pandemic was hard on the small banks, and we want a strong small banking. And it explains why the health of an economy and the small business economy in Main Street depend on lots of healthy small banks. Mm-hmm. And so one of the most important things, and this is what Frank understands, and I don't think that the banking associations understand yet, they don't understand what a threat CBDC and digital ID and fast payment systems are. And you know, I want to stress again, what we're trying to get is financial transaction freedom. CBDCs is not the only problem. Fast payment systems and what they can do with credit cards and banking accounts without CBDCs, you know, that kind of control is a real problem. It's a real problem now. So as we saw with the Tennessee truckers. Mm-hmm. So this memo on sovereign state banks is very, very good and important. And it helps you understand why you want the state to be able to transact without the feds or the central banks being able to shut them down. Mm-hmm. And to afford that protection to the local banks and the local citizens. Mm-hmm. You want financial liquidity that the feds can't kill.
That's right.
Right.
And right now we have, as you know, you're well aware, we look at the situation, how the deficit has exploded. I talked about that earlier. You know, we were at only about $10 trillion about 15 years ago. Now it's exploded up to $34 trillion. But I'm sure that's just the tip of the iceberg. As I point out, there's all these other things in terms of obligations that the federal government has. And so there's this massive system that is really not sustainable and corrupt. And so what happens as we start to see, it's also another thing that's happened is the deficit is going up. And as we're using the dollar as a weapon, fewer and fewer people are using abroad or getting off of the dollar as a reserve currency. What are going to be the implications if that continues and accelerates? What's going to be the implications?
Higher prices. Mm-hmm. So as the squeeze comes on, the value, you know, basically, the reason everybody's been going along with the crime is the criminals have been sharing, you know, crumbs with us.
Yeah.
So if you talk to a state legislator, why can't we establish, you know, so Tennessee's considering rejecting federal education aid. Mm-hmm. You know, there's an addiction to the money.
That's right.
So the central banks print money and use that money to buy us, even though that drives up inflation. So at the end of the day, we don't end up better off. But, you know, we have this addiction to getting federal money. So we're on the dole. Mm-hmm. And as we stay on the dole, our economies get weaker and weaker and weaker, you know, and we become more and more dependent on that dole. So there is a financial addiction going on to central bank printed money. And that is going to, the question is, when is the pain great enough that we're willing to walk away from that money? Now, as they share less and less, you know, crumbs, and prices go up and up from this sort of inflation game, you know, when are people going to realize we are better off creating the conditions of sovereignty, rejecting that money? And what I will tell you, David, is, you know, in the 90s at Hamilton Securities, I did a lot of simulation of what we could do if we took government money and we re-engineered it to optimize economic health as opposed to central control.
Yeah, that's right.
And
that's right.
If, you know, it's going to be a rough transition because we've delayed it for so long. But if we go through that transition, we can build a much more moral and productive society.
Oh, I agree. And, I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's always been the case. And it's been difficult. I've had this frustrating thing. I feel like I'm banging my head against the wall. When I talk to people about what happened in 2020, they say, well, Trump didn't do it. And I said, no, you understand it's the money, right? That's how they get every, that's how they get around the 10th Amendment. They bribe people. They get you addicted to the money. And then they pull it back and say, well, now I'm going to blackmail you. If we look at what happened with Trump, you know, he's out there, his administration, they're giving a 20% bonus. If you identify somebody as COVID, they're giving you a bonus to diagnose them, $13,000, $39,000. You put them on a ventilator, 20% on everything that you do. And then when Biden comes in, and now that they've gotten used to this money, he says, well, if you don't get everybody in the hospital vaccinated, I'm going to not give you any Medicare or Medicaid. I'm going to shut everything off. And that's the way it always works. Going back into the 90s.
Right, but I'm going to be tough on Trump because he swung $10 billion of taxpayers' money into a military program that completely bypassed all the safety things, you know, that are implicit in healthcare law, to poison millions of Americans.
That's right.
So
that's right. Yeah, he's the he's the poisoner in chief. Absolutely no doubt about it.
Exactly.
And it was a military operation. That's what
it
I'm
was a military
about.
Operation and he put $10 billion behind it, and he appointed to run it a man who was a brain machine interface expert from GlaxoSmithKline.
Yeah.
Oh, so,
and they've been practicing this, you know, since 2 months before 9/11. You know, they've had their annual germ game thing, and it's coming from the DARPA. So of course they're going to have the warp speed thing be a military thing. Yeah, it's really difficult to get people to understand that. And sometimes I explain, you know, when we were doing homeschooling of our kids, we're now grown. I know that there were a lot of people in the homeschool facility community that wanted to say, well, let's have let's fight to get our kids into the sports programs and the band programs and things like that. And I said, you know, there's going to be strings attached to all that money and all those benefits that you're fighting for. They're going to use that to blackmail you. And that's exactly what they do. They get around the 10th Amendment by offering people money, getting them addicted to the money, and then say, okay, now put the boys in the girls' bathroom or we're going to take the money away. It always works out that way. Really.
So one of my favorite quotes is from Franklin Sanders, who's that wonderful, I don't know if you've had Franklin on, he's a wonderful precious metals dealer and pastor in Middle Tennessee. So he says, all government money comes with a sock in the jaw.
That's a good way to put it. Well, tell us a little bit about the tour, because we're about out of time. It's going to be, you're going to have...
So I'm coming down to Tennessee. I should be there by the 23rd, and then I'm heading over to Middle Tennessee. I got a lot of meetings in Nashville and some of the surrounding states. I'm going to drop down to Mississippi and Alabama, and you know, a lot of the states around Tennessee are talking about doing the same things and talking about how they network together.
Yes, and that's a key thing, too, having a network of states. That's one of the things Senator Nicely's talked about. You got to get several states.
A network of states is, you know, I don't want to call it the Confederacy, but anyway.
Well, technically it would be, I guess, but.
I think just now you're talking about something that's much more bottom up, where the states cooperate and coordinate, you know, deal by deal transactions. So you have a... You know, so you have relationships where you're helping each other do a better job, go faster.
Yes.
And they're, you know, given the different strengths of the different states, there's so much that can be done to cooperate between those states that will really help advantage each other.
That's right.
So, you know, I think it's pretty exciting. And if you look at the, you know, we have an extraordinary number of very capable and talented state legislators who have been... You know, they haven't gone up to the federal level. They haven't become senators or congressmen because they're too clean.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
They're too clean, but they're very, very competent and they're very capable. And And it's taken a while for them to realize, oh, I'm more competent to engineer this than, you know, all these hotshots. Mm-hmm. You know, they've got a control file. They're on a leash. I can do this.
And so I keep telling everybody that's what's important is the state and local races is far more important. You have far more leverage than you do with Washington.
So I'm telling you to spend almost all your time and money this year on your state and local races.
That's right.
Don't worry about the federal election because this will be decided. And if you're in a state that where there's not going to be financial transaction freedom and you can move, you may want to get your... I don't want to say that because the traffic problem in Tennessee is really bad. Well,
think about what happened in 2020, and that's where you can see that it where the rubber meets the road is at the local level. So your schedule is going to be there
Solaria.com. I'm coming at the end of January, mm-hmm. and I'll be in Hickory Valley for the first week or two, and then I'll move over to Shelbyville and be going up, spending a lot of time in Nashville. And then I'll be networking around the state for lots of meetings and then head up to New England for the end of February. I'll be there for a week and then come back to Tennessee. But we'll be going around the country and at some point we'll put up our schedule by the end of the month so people will know where we're going. We're really responding to clusters of people, particularly Salary Report subscribers who want to meet up. And it's great because one of the things that happens, and this is one of the reasons I want to do this, is we have these wonderful subscribers and they're in a place and they say, there are no like-minded people around. And I'll look at our database and I'll say, look, there are a ton of like-minded people around because they're all subscribing to the Salary Report. So we'll go there and meet up and then everybody meets. And it's so amazing to watch it, David, because literally you can be in some of these meetings and within an hour, they look like they've known each other for 20 years. It's so fabulous. Fabulous. So
that's great.
So we're going to try and do a lot of meetups and make sure people can find each other, sort of in their local areas.
Good. So people check the checksolari.com.
And they will
see your schedule as it gets finalized because you're still building that. So that's great. Looking forward to seeing you at one of these. And I'll be checking the site to see where that's going to be coming. Thank you so much for joining us, Catherine Austin Fitz.
Thank you, David. I just love what you do. I've always loved what you do, and we're in cahoots.
Thank you. Thank you very much. All right, that's it for the show today, folks. Thank you for listening. Have a good day.
The David Knight Show is a critical thinking super spreader. If you've been exposed to logic by listening to the David Knight Show, please do your part and try not to spread it. Financial support or simply telling others about the show causes this dangerous information to spread farther. People have to trust me. Trust the science. Wear your mask. Take your vaccine. Don't ask questions.
Using free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.